The title of this conference is The First Beatitude, Poverty in Spirit or Detachment. How happy are they who know they are spiritually poor? The kingdom of God is theirs. Poverty of spirit is the realization of our total dependence on God. As St. Paul puts it, what have you that you have not received? The spiritually poor are those who have nothing to expect from this world, but who expect everything from God. They look to God alone for the fulfillment of all their basic needs. They cast themselves upon God's loving care and become beggars of the Spirit before God. The poor in spirit, therefore, are willing to be a beggar, to ask humbly of God all that is needed, to be totally dependent upon God's mercy, to be keenly aware of the need of help from God. We must, therefore, be humble and honest enough to know who we are, to know our limitations, to accept our weaknesses, our need of God. In this sense, poverty of spirit, the first beatitude, is talking about authenticity. To be an authentic person is to realize very vividly our poverty, our great neediness as a creature. The basic disposition and requirement for anyone choosing to follow the way that leads to the kingdom of God is total detachment from everything that is not the will of God. In practice, this total detachment toward everything of this world means the willingness to be content with what is needed, what is necessary to carry out our ministry and our vocation on earth, but to be willing to do without all luxury, all things that are not essential to our vocation. Another way to speak of poverty of spirit is to say that this first beatitude is a call to live a very simple lifestyle. In that sense, the first beatitude goes directly contrary to much of the advertising that we see or hear in our modern world, where the emphasis is on amassing more and more of the goods of this world, of obtaining as many pleasures as we possibly can. If we had a truly Christian culture, the whole structure of modern advertising would have to be drastically changed, and the amount of money spent on advertising greatly decreased. Jesus is telling us here in this first beatitude that happiness will be found not by increasing our wants and our desires, but in just the opposite way, by decreasing our wants and desires, by becoming detached from everything that is not essential to our vocation. The detachment of this first beatitude is not only from material things, but from everything. It means detachment from our own will, from our likes and dislikes. Detachment from everything except God and God's will. St. John of the Cross tells us that it makes no difference whether a bird is tied down to earth by a slender thread or a heavy chain. it is impossible for the bird to fly away until that thread is broken. And so, by detachment, we must break every thread that ties us down to earth or to our selfishness. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Notice the use of the present tense in the promise that Jesus makes. Only those who are truly poor and detached from the things of this world will find happiness upon earth, according to Jesus. For theirs is the kingdom of God. It is only when we have reached a point where we are uninterested in the things of this earth, except those things that are needed to carry out God's will in our regard, it is only then that we will find true peace and happiness, which is really the beginning of heaven. This detachment gives us freedom, and it is only the person who is free that can be happy. Putting it another way, the detached person is carefree, free of anxiety, free of worry and fear regarding the future, totally trusting in God as long as we try to do God's will as best we can. Detachment from the things of this world does not mean that we refuse to enjoy those creature comforts whenever it seems clear that such is God's will for us. Rather, it is the willingness to do without them, or to give them up immediately, the moment we become convinced that God's will is calling us in another direction. Detachment means that we do not look back on the things that we have to give up, but that we keep our eyes always ahead on the will of God. It means that we are able to do without the things of this world without regret, without self-pity, without envy of those who have them, without anger or resentment or bitterness. In order to know whether we have this kind of detachment, and in order to increase whatever detachment we now have, it is essential that we practice frequent self-denial of the joys and pleasures of this world, not totally, but at least in some way every day. William James, the great psychologist at Harvard at the beginning of this century, says that if we wish to keep alive the spirit of detachment and to experience this freedom of the spirit, that we need to practice at least one act of self-denial every day. Perhaps this is what Jesus means when he says that we must take up our cross each day and follow him. Poverty of spirit is therefore primarily the attitude which we have toward the things of this world. Our willingness to be truly poor and not know where or how our present and future needs will be fulfilled. The willingness to depend on God's providence to supply our needs from day to day. It means a happy recognition of our limitations as a creature, our weakness, our faults, our failures, our creatureliness. Detachment gives us the freedom and the openness to move in any direction that God wills for us. It means to keep our bags packed and ready to move, willing to change, to let go, to give up all that is near and dear to us. As Jesus puts it in the 9th chapter of Luke, anyone putting his hand to the plow and looking back is not fit for the kingdom of God. We must then train ourselves to be content, really, with a minimum of the goods of this world, just those things necessary to carry out our mission on earth. By detachment, we make room in our lives for God and the things of God. It gives us an opportunity to put in proper order the priorities in our life. We were born to serve the whole of life and not merely that little portion of life which we possess. Life is bigger than the individual, more than this earthly possession. Just as we are told in the 2nd chapter of the Epistle to the Philippians that Jesus emptied himself, so we must be willing to empty ourselves of everything that is not in accord with God's will. It is not, therefore, a case of masochistically diminishing our enjoyment of pleasure, but rather of sacrificing temporary pleasures for the higher, better, more permanent joys of life. Self-denial of earthly pleasure and bodily pleasure is required to liberate the higher powers within us. We only have so much energy and so much time, and if all or most of our time and energy is given to the things of this world, there is none left for the things of God. We need a constant stripping of things that are near and dear to us in order to be open to the higher values. For example, there needs to be a balance in our life between feasting and fasting. There should be as much fasting in our life as there is feasting. Or putting it another way, there should have been in our life as many experiences of going to extremes in fasting too much as there are experiences of going to extremes in feasting and eating too much. And yet we know that most of us, practically all of us, have many times overeaten. But how many of us can say that even once in our life that we have made a mistake in fasting too much, in practicing too much self-denial? Actually, we need to test the upper limits of life at both ends, both in self-indulgence and in self-denial. But the ordinary experience is that we have plenty of experiences of self-indulgence, but very few of self-denial. And therefore, we never discover the optimum point of greatest spiritual and psychological growth. When Jesus speaks of the happiness and the blessedness of the poor, he does not mean that every poor person is going to heaven and every rich person is going to hell. Jesus is not interested primarily in the external condition of a person, but in our internal disposition. And that is why Matthew translates this beatitude is, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed and happy are they who are detached from the things of this world, who have not made a god out of money and material possessions. How fortunate are such people who do not depend primarily on the things of this world for their happiness, but depend directly and primarily upon God. This first beatitude can also be taken to mean those who are poor in their own estimation, those who admit that they are nothing of themselves. In that sense, this beatitude can refer to humility, the opposite of the conceited, the rich-hearted person who imagines that one is better than others, and that this goodness is due to their own efforts and not to God. God promises that those who are humble, and detached, and poor in spirit, that they will possess the kingdom of God. In exchange for giving up the attachment to the things of this world, they will receive a special claim upon God's promise of present and eternal possession of his kingdom. The only really happy people upon earth are those who are so detached from material possessions and whose only desire is to please God and do God's will in all things. When we put our efforts to amassing more and more of the goods and pleasures of this world, we find that we are never satisfied. The more we get, the more we want. The more precarious becomes these possessions of the goods of this world. Whereas if we put our dependence upon God and the doing of God's will, we find that as we go on in life, that the realization of God's loving care becomes more and more present. We become more and more free, more and more happy. Jesus guarantees our security in a most paradoxical way by demanding that we give up all our security and abandon ourselves to God. In that sense, it is similar to what God asked of Abraham in the 12th chapter of Genesis, when he told him to leave the place where you now are and go to the place that I will show you. Just as in the case of Abraham, God asked us to live from day to day in total dependence upon the graciousness of God. A daily vulnerability to God, a radical vulnerability to the transcendent element of life. It is clear in the Gospels that Jesus showed a preference for the poor, for the oppressed, for the lowly, the anuim, as they are called in the Old Testament. Those who have nothing to expect from this world, who do not fit into the structures of this world. Such people, Jesus insists, are people who are the best able to expect everything from God, who are able most easily to cast themselves totally upon God's loving care. And therefore, Jesus says that the kingdom of God comes to such persons more easily, that God wills to be present with them in a very special way, by the inbreaking of his love and mercy, his healing, his forgiveness. God promises to comfort and satisfy such people who are keenly aware of their nothingness and their helplessness, and are willing to cast all their care on God. Such will become truly blessed and happy. Poverty of spirit is a perfect preparation for prayer, since it requires of us the faith and trust and dependence on God that is necessary for good prayer. Without poverty of spirit, we are tempted to depend too much on ourselves and on the things of this world rather than on God. In that sense, only the spiritually poor person can really pray. However, poverty without trust and hope in God will lead to despair, frustration, discouragement, a breakdown of our inner spirit, a loss of peace and joy. And this will be replaced with fear and anxiety for the future. Therefore, poverty in spirit and trust in God must grow hand in hand in proper balance. One without the other will not bring happiness. It is only the two together that are needed. To follow the spirit of the first beatitude, there must be a willingness to live for the present moment, to make the most of each passing moment without undue concern about the future and how we are going to handle the problems of tomorrow. To live up to this beatitude, we must be willing to be ignored and passed over by others, not taken seriously by them, willing to be laughed at, made fun of, ridiculed, forgotten. If we can accept this lowly condition in the right spirit, without anger or bitterness or rebellion, we will find a tremendous freedom in this state and be able to give our attention to the really important matters in life. No longer are we dependent on the approval of others, but we are totally dependent on God. Jesus in the Gospel set a good example of what is meant by this poverty of spirit. And we know that he insisted that his disciples follow a similar path of poverty. As he told one person, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus depended upon the goodwill of the people among whom he worked. It was through the free will offerings of the people to whom he preached that he depended for his daily bread. The disciples of Jesus found this teaching of Jesus about poverty just as difficult to understand and to accept as we do today. For example, in the 10th chapter of Mark, Jesus told the rich young man that if he wished to be perfect, he must go and sell everything he had and give it to the poor, and only then would he be able to come and be a disciple of Jesus. The rich young man, because he was attached to the things of this world, because he lacked this poverty of spirit, turned away sad from this request of Jesus. And when he went away, Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, "How difficult it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven." With that, the disciples marveled at his words. And so Jesus repeated, "My dear children, how difficult it is to enter the kingdom of God. It is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." With that, the disciples were completely overwhelmed and exclaimed to one another, "Who then can be saved?" Jesus fixed his gaze on them and said, "With men it is impossible, but not so for God. With God all things are possible." If then we wish to live up to this first beatitude, we must depend on God's help. It is something that we are unable to accomplish by our own efforts. To practice the detachment from worldly goods and worldly pleasures required of a disciple or follower of Jesus, we must become beggars of the Spirit, which is another way to translate this beatitude. Blessed and happy are the beggars of the Spirit. Daily, we must beg God for the necessary spirit, the necessary help, the necessary desire and grace to practice this detachment that the gospel asks of us. We beg for the grace to depend upon God's loving care. This is the best and the only insurance policy that will bring us that freedom and detachment and happiness that we call the kingdom of God. Alongside the help of God's grace that will come to us through prayer, there must also be our willingness and our sincere desire to practice the simple lifestyle demanded by this first beatitude. Unless we sincerely desire it, God will not answer our prayer for spiritual poverty. But even this desire is a gift of God. As St. Paul expresses it in the second chapter of Philippians, it is God who works in you both to will and to accomplish the good that you do. So perhaps if we are to practice the detachment that this poverty of spirit of the first beatitude requires, our first step is to pray sincerely to God for the desire to practice it, the desire to live a detached, simple lifestyle, realizing that only if God will give us this grace will we be able to carry it out. And here perhaps is where we must become truly a beggar of the Spirit. In a sense, to give God no peace is not to stop asking until He has given us this desire for poverty of spirit. Like the woman in the 18th chapter of Luke's Gospel, who wore down the judge until he finally gave her what she wanted. So we, in a sense, must wear down God with our persistent plea to give us the grace, to give us the desire for this poverty of spirit, and then, of course, the grace to practice it. This is the end of the conference on the first beatitude, poverty in spirit or detachment.